You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
What's up? What's up? Anita Marks with you on this Sunday morning. What a beautiful morning it is. I will tell you that. As always, coming to you from the living room of my fantastic apartment with mi familia, my family. So if you hear barking dogs in the background, that is why. It is a fantastic Sunday morning. They are looking out the window, watching the folks walk by with their coffee while they chew on their bully sticks. With you for the next 3 hours, here is, we like to call it, Sunday Fun Day. Giselle is our producer. He's producing back in our studios in New York City. Giselle, good morning.
Good morning, Anita.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm doing all right. Potentially in a position to possibly win some money. And you know what I like to say, Giselle? Mama always could use a new pair of shoes. So heading into the PGA Championship, I told folks, put your money on Brooks Koepka. Three-peat, baby. That's right. He's 7-under, 2 shots back. And I love what he said prior to the tournament starting. One of my favorite quotes. Brooks is not shy. And boy, is he arrogant. And this is what I... Because a lot of times, if... A lot of times, right, Giselle, like, there's an athlete who's arrogant, and he might rub you the wrong way, right? Like, you're just like, oh, like, I can't, like, this guy just, I just want to vomit. This guy just makes me sick. He's so arrogant. He's such a, you know, I don't feel that. Here's the thing. Brooks Koepka doesn't pretend to be anything else but a jerk. He doesn't care. He doesn't want you to like him. He doesn't care if you like him. He doesn't care. Not that he doesn't care about his brand, but all Brooks Koepka wants to do is win majors. That's all he wants to do. And we know that's what Tiger is obviously trying to do. But there were other things. When Tiger started his career, there were other things that, you know, Tiger wanted to win the most tournaments, and he was able to do that, to surpass Sam Snead. You know, now he's looking to surpass Jack for the most majors. But it's just, Brooks is just all about the majors. A lot of times, if you don't know any, if you know Brooks Koepka, maybe you don't know a lot about him. He's from South Florida. His mom was a big-time news anchor in South Florida. So I've known about Brooks Koepka since he was younger. There was talks about him, you know, playing a lot of amateurs and being really good. And again, I just, not that he doesn't care about his brand. He does. But there's just... He just exudes that kind of that arrogant, that swag, that nasty, like, I don't give up about anything. I'm just on this planet to win championships. He's not pretending to be someone he's not. He doesn't try to say the wrong things and awkwardly says something that just doesn't fit or isn't right or, you know, is BS. He just doesn't give it. And he's just arrogant. And for whatever, like, I am one of those people that I love humble athletes. I love athletes that play with humility, that lead with humility, that have this charm about them that I gravitate to those athletes. But there's something about Brooks Koepka that his arrogance doesn't affect me. And prior to the tournament kicking off, he said, this is a big boy golf course. So he was asked, what makes you feel that you can three-peat? He's won the PGA Championship 2 years in a row. So what makes you think that you could three-peat? And Brooks said, well, first of all, this is a big boy golf course. So it's immediately going to eliminate half the field. Can you imagine? You imagine you're a golfer. Imagine I'm trying to like I'm looking like some big names got cut, by the way. Okay, Zach Johnson, Ricky Fowler, Mark Leishman, Hatton, Kuchar. I'm going down the list here of guys that were Max Homa, who's had a great season so far. You know, Sergio Garcia. You know, you imagine you're one of those guys. You're like, you know what? Screw you, Brooks. You know, immediately, right off the bat, this is a big boy golf course. Half the guys are going to get it's going to put them out of contention. Even looking at the guys that didn't get cut, that are towards the bottom of the leaderboard with some big names. Jordan Spieth, he's +7 right now. Victor Hovland, I was expecting big things from him. He's +2 right now. Gary Woodland, +2. Tiger Woods, +2. Shot a 68 the first day, 72 on Friday and Saturday. So that's first and foremost. And when asked again, well, you know, what is it about you, Brooks, that sets you apart? And he pretty much said, people make golf difficult. Golf's not difficult. People make golf difficult. Are you kidding me? I've been playing sports my whole life, competitively. I consider myself a top athlete. Always, whatever I performed in, always excelled. Golf has to be the most difficult sport I've ever played in my life. In my life. The most frustrating, no matter what you do, how much you practice. It's there's so many little things that go into the game of golf to be good, to excel, to dominate. Mental aspect is definitely one of them, which obviously Brooks has. But there's just something about his arrogance and something about his cockiness that just it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me like I would say most other athletes do. But regardless, looking at this leaderboard, Dustin Johnson is at the top of the leaderboard. He is 9 under. He shot 5 under yesterday, a 65 to elevate him 10 spots up to be number one coming into today. Now, Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka are best friends. They're buddies. They're two peas in a pod. Bosom buddies, if you remember that show. They have a routine together. They wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. The first thing they do is they work out twice a day. They wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. They go to the gym. They work out for about 30, 45 minutes. I had their trainer on my golf show on the tee with Anita Marks last year. Then they go out and they'll spend hours practicing. Then they'll have lunch. Then they'll work out again. They have a second workout in the course of the day. And then they'll go out and they'll play 9 or they'll play 18 and they'll call it a day. That's how they and they do it together. They have the same trainer. They share the same trainer. So they're close. So Brooks was talking smack with Dustin Johnson, saying, you know, how many majors has he won? You know, Brooks obviously has had more majors than Dustin Johnson. When asked, does he feel that he could surpass DJ and win this tournament today? So I love Brooks Koepka. I love the mental aspect, even though it might annoy some people. I like the way that he played last week at the FedEx WGC. He finished that tournament number one strokes gained tee to green. That's a really big metric that you need to look at heading into this tournament. I love that he's talking smack right now and just being 2 shots back. I think he's going to come out and really impress some folks today. Don't be surprised if Brooks Koepka just goes off today.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Thank you. Thanks, my friend. Thanks for having me on. And you did. Dr. John Steinberger. You got it right. Nailed it.
Woo. Thank God for my producer, Giselle. I had to ask him a few times before that segment. All right. So the Mac decides to cancel... Let's say delay, right? Because really the mindset here is let's postpone, let's delay, let's see what happens in the spring. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, they're going to give it the best shot to put together a 12-month plan, an entirely new plan, and hope that they're able to play fall sports in some shape or form in the spring of 2021.
So I love what he said there, Heather, when he said, we're going to listen to the medical experts. right? Like this is about the medical advice, where, let's be honest, we're talking about a lot of money. I'm reading reports that, let's say, hypothetically speaking, a college football season doesn't happen, or there's only, you know, a percentage of it that's played. We're talking about anywhere between $60 to $100 million that a university will lose if that happens. And that money is utilized for other sports. For example, the golf team, the soccer team, the lacrosse team, the field hockey team. So, you know, when you're talking about that kind of money, I commend Dr. John and I commend the MAC putting the kids, with all due respect, the young men and women, their safety before the dollar.
And he said repeatedly during that video conference yesterday, I was on that this was not a financial decision. I mean, he must have said it at least half a dozen times, that it was not based on the finances. And it can't be, because like you said, you're only going to bleed money from this. And it's quite possible that there are some programs and sports that will not recover from this. Let me rephrase that. There are going to be some sports and programs that won't recover from it financially. And there are so many other questions it raises, like, do you pay the coaches for these months that they're not working until the spring? What happens to those contracts? What happens to eligibility? You know, I spoke with the athletic director from Louisiana Monroe, which is in the Sun Belt, and this was a couple weeks ago, and he told me that when they canceled spring sports, he gave his student athletes the option to return for their eligibility, right? And he said about 10 of them took him up on that offer. And that's going to cost him about $250,000 in scholarship money. And that's from the last round of cancellations when the coronavirus pandemic first began in March. So what you're going to see now, Anita, is the backlog of athletic departments with these scholarships if this continues to happen. And that's going to trickle down to the high school level, because that's going to impact recruiting for the juniors and seniors right now. So this is going to have an enormous impact on scholarships, eligibility, and recruiting.
I have so many questions here. Again, Heather Dinich joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Is this the first domino to fall in regard to, you know, the Big Five school, the Big Five conferences, you know, the SEC, ACC, Pac-12, Big Ten, all of those? Like, what do you see happening with the MAC decision coming down? What do you see happening with those conferences?
This one is different. The MAC decision was the first FBS conference to make such a drastic move. And I think that is the first domino to fall, because I have said repeatedly that they will continue to move forward until somebody in the medical field tells them to stop. It's not safe anymore. And I think we are on the brink of that message. And I think that what the MAC did opens the door for the big boys to follow that path. The Big Ten presidents met yesterday. There wasn't a vote or anything that came out of that meeting, but the Pac-12 presidents are meeting on Tuesday. You know, this is something that everybody is going to be watching this week, because, like I said, I think that the MAC opened the door. But again, it goes back to the advice of the medical experts. And right now there are some big time concerns about the unknowns of the lasting impact of the coronavirus.
Really, that's what it comes down to, because, you know, Heather, let's be honest, you know, majority of athletes that have been tested for COVID-19 and have come back positive, you know, really haven't suffered, you know, the dire extremes of what we've seen of those who have had to go to hospitals and put on some type of breathing apparatus and whatnot. However, what we, and there's so much we don't know about this virus, but a little bit, you know, the pitcher, the 27-year-old pitcher from the Boston Red Sox now that has an enlarged heart, which is a result of the COVID-19. Even though, you know, he didn't have to be hospitalized, it affected him that way. So there's also some concern in regard to lung capacity at the end of the day. So I think a lot of times we look at like, well, what do you mean? You know, these great specimens, these professional athletes or these top college student athletes, they're in such great shape. They get it. They'll be fine. Well, they'll be fine in the present day, but we don't know what the long term effects are going to be.
Exactly. And that's a major concern, not just for the medical community who's advising each of these conferences, but for the student athletes. I mean, we have seen over the past week the Pac-12 players speak out in a united way, the Big Ten players speak out, the Mountain West Conference has seen it. So in addition to what the MAC just did, you're also seeing a vocal outcry from a lot of players in major conferences saying, hold on a minute now, we're raising our hands to make sure that you can promise you can take care of us. And if they can't, that's a major issue. And so here we are at the crossroads this week, I think, as to whether or not the conferences can surrender the sport to the advice of medical experts.
Heather Dennis joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. I was reading what Notre Dame has done the past, and I think last time we were on, we mentioned it, or you mentioned it, how didn't Notre Dame take over a hotel near campus or a dorm on campus, and they've kind of made that into the bubble, and the players have been abiding by, you know, they've been, you know, holding up their part of the deal in regard to protocol, and they've been doing well.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, we're seeing the NBA have great success in this bubble in Florida. Same thing with hockey in Canada. You know, I mean, I guess is it the cost of the logistics of creating? Let's say the conferences create their own bubbles. I mean, is it the cost would just be just ridiculously too much? It wouldn't make sense. Is that what the issue is in regard to the bubble philosophy for college sports?
I think it would be too astronomical of a fee to do that. And the other thing, too, that's different is if you're going to create this bubble for these athletes, then why can't you create it for the 50,000 other students and protect them as well? There's always that parallel universe, right, with the student athletes, right? And I'm putting my fingers up in the quotation marks, right?
Right.
Like you can't separate one. You can't treat them differently as much as they are treated differently, right? You have to protect the lab students to the same degree that you're protecting the football players. So I think that's part of the issue, too, is the optics of it, right? Well, hey, we're going to make sure everybody here is okay so that they can play the football games. But everybody else just kind of fend for yourself, and whatever happens, happens. So I think that's part of it, too. But there are people who have wondered, why can't you create the bubble for college football? But remember, I think it's $150 million that it's costing the NBA, right, for that.
And that's just for a few months.
Right, yeah. Right. So the cost, along with the optics of just the general student body and the university presidents and the class issue and all of that, I think all of those things combined just make it such a different situation for colleges that people didn't even want to really try.
So Heather, apparently Trevor Lawrence went to social media and said that he wants to play. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised? And I said this on my show yesterday. I'm very transparent. You've known me for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I've said if I played Major League Baseball back in the day where steroids were running rampant, chances are I probably would have taken them myself. I'll be transparent right now. If I was Trevor Lawrence, I would not play. I know that I'm going to be the number one pick. I would not risk heart issues, lung issues. I would not risk it. I would not play. And if anyone has, you know, disappointed in me, sorry, not sorry. I've got, it's my future. It's my family. It's my livelihood. Maybe some people look at that as being selfish. I don't. But are you surprised that Trevor Lawrence has come out and said, I want to play?
Yes and no. Yes, I'm surprised for every reason that you just mentioned. And there are several athletes of elite stature who have said we're not going to do that. Micah Parsons at Penn State, one of them, great linebacker, like the highlight of the bowl season last year. To hear Trevor Lawrence say it, though, I think also reminds us, Anita, that college athletes, this is their identity as well, right? This is what they train for, what they work for every single day. And there are still a lot of them. I would go so far as to say the majority of them who do want to play because they've been on campus in this little athletic bubble that has protected them and surrounded them with doctors and resources the majority of us regular people could only wish that we had at our fingertips. And so they feel safe right now. But what happens is when 50,000 other students come join them, that bubble bursts. And then it gets a lot more difficult to protect them. They're on their own. So I understand the athlete's desire and willingness to play, but I think it's also coming from a spot right now where they're somewhat isolated and in this protective cocoon of their athletic facilities, too.
Just wild, wild, wild situation here. Okay, so Heather, what I know we'll probably see you all over Get Up with Greeny and in SportsCenter all week this week. What are you anticipating? Like, what are you anticipating? What do you see developing this week?
My gut feeling is that there's a lot of big news. It wouldn't surprise me if this is the week that real major decisions are made and some of the big conferences say we can't do this. That's a gut feeling. That's an educated guess. I haven't reported that. Again, just going off a gut feeling. We'll see what happens, but you know, we're getting into mid-August here where teams are putting on helmets and going out and hitting each other, and students are coming back to campus. And like I said, I think it's all really coming to a crossroads, and this is where the big decisions have to be made.
Heather, thank you so much for your time this morning. Really do appreciate it. You do such a phenomenal job, and I thank you.
Back at you. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. This is the rhythm of the night. Baby, tonight's like fuego.
We about to spend a dinero. We party to the extremo. Anita Marks with you here on 98.7 ESPN. You got a Florida, I still say Florida. All right. I still say Joe Robbie Stadium, David. You got the Miami Marlins, 7-2 this season. They did lose to the Mets last night, 8-4. DeGrom going up against them today. But David Sampson, former president of the Miami Marlins, joins us now. You can see him all over CBS, CBSSports.com. He's got an excellent show podcast out. I'm sure he'll tell you all about it in just a second. But David, dude, Marlins, 7-2. 7-2.
Listen, it's the story of baseball right now, right? They lost 18 players. They did more transactions than I've ever seen. And what they're doing is they're doing two things that you need to win. They're pitching well, and they're hitting in a timely way. So, you know, are they going to be like Seattle last year, started 13-2 and then faded? Or in a 60-game season, can they keep this up? The answer is, who knows? But right now, it's so great for Miami, for the players, just to see them playing good baseball. And in this crazy 2020 season, you just don't know what's going to happen.
So explain how this is possible. Because from what I understand, like over 10, if not like what, 15, 18 guys on their 20-something man roster are guys that they picked up, not guys that they started the season with. So does this happen? How does this happen, David?
Yeah, they've redone the whole roster. They had 18 positive cases. They made a few trades. They did a few waiver claims. They put the team together sort of like the movie Major League. And no one knows who the people are, who the players are. But the fact is, when you've got pitchers who are executing, when you've got hitters who are, you know, hitting for average and hitting some home runs and they're doing the little things, you know, the question is this adrenaline? Is this excitement? Is this just one of those things? They were playing the Orioles. Maybe the Orioles aren't good. They're playing the Mets. Maybe the Mets are only okay. You just don't know. But when you're in that position, when you're playing well, I know as president, when we had a streak, you don't question it. You just ride the wave, because in any season, you're going to have ups and downs. Even the worst teams have 7 or 8 game stretches where they're 6-1 or 7-1. And you just try to go as long as you can. But again, Anita, it's such a crazy season where you just don't know which teams are going to end up persevering and staying healthy enough and staying injury-free enough. That's really the biggest story of the season, not just COVID, but the injuries that have happened.
Yeah, you know, Joe Judge, head coach of the Giants, came out last week and said, you know, the teams that are going to do well in the NFL are the ones that are going to stay the healthiest. Not the ones that have the best clock management, not the ones that call the right play on 4th and 1. It's the teams that are going to be able to stay the healthiest. But here the Marlins are proving that notion wrong, right?
Well,
I mean,
in general, remember, it's a long season. But what's funny is I don't know what happens in a 60-game season, right? There's no way to know. Could a team stay hot for 60 games or relatively hot? Could there be 1 or 2 unexpected playoff teams in Major League Baseball? The answer is I really think that's possible. Over 162 games, you rarely have surprises because a long season sort of takes out the variability. But in a 60-game season, you just don't know.
Again, David Sampson joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Another team facing some COVID-19 situations and outbreaks is the Cardinals. Now, their weekend series against the Cubs postponed. They have 3 additional players now that that have contracted COVID-19 or have come back with a positive test. So your thoughts on how the Cardinals have been handling the situation and how the Marlins, as opposed to how the Marlins have been handling the situation?
You know, we're trying to always place faults and try to figure out, MLB was trying to figure out who's to blame, who's patient zero, how did this all work? And I think what we're finding is that it's easy to get COVID because of how it's transmitted. And obviously, everyone could be more vigilant on and off the field, but that goes for all of us. And we know that once it happens, you're then in a situation where you have to adjust. And the Cardinals keep getting positive tests. And so the question is, what's going to happen with the Cardinals? Are they going to lose Monday's game against the Pirates? We heard they are. Then the question is, are they going to lose the whole series against the Pirates? And if they do, the next question is, will they get to play 60 games? And then the next question is, how many of these 7-inning doubleheaders will they play? And you know that doubleheaders are generally split. So will that have a negative impact on their ability to maybe make the playoffs in such a what we thought would be competitive NL Central? But it turns out the Cubs right now are running away with it. But again, it's still pretty early, Anita. It's not totally early, but it's pretty early.
Your thoughts? Let me ask you this. I know it's pretty early on in the season. What's the one thing that stands out to you the most? That's been the biggest surprise. Pleasant surprise, something that you weren't anticipating. What is that?
I think that as I watched this season unravel, it's been a little surprising. I thought the pitchers would be ahead of the hitters. Mm-hmm. I thought that there would be, and that hasn't been the case. There have been some great pitching performances, some great, you know, Shane Bieber's a great story. He's pitching today. I've been surprised at some of the aces who have not been performing the way that we thought they could perform. But again, in such a small sample size, when you've only had 3 starts, things can get magnified if you have 1 bad start. But the thing is, these pitchers are only going to get 12 or 13 starts. So every bad start obviously gets magnified that much more. I've been disappointed in the Diamondbacks and Madison Baumgartner. I always thought he was a middle-of-the-rotation guy now, but he's pitching like a bottom-of-the-rotation guy after signing that big deal. I think that you've got players who are suffering from some sophomore issues, which does not surprise me, whether it's Pete Alonso, who hit the home run yesterday and maybe he's beginning to see the ball better, or Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with the Blue Jays, who's struggling. Or you've got some players, you know, Aaron Judge is healthy and look what he's doing for the Yankees. And then, of course, you've got Giancarlo Stanton, who's back on the injured list, just announced 5 minutes ago. So there's some things that you think are normal, some things that are not. But I can't wait for the season to unfold, and I just hope that there's no more outbreaks, that the Cardinals and Marlins are the only teams that this happens to, because if another team or two, if this happens, I think that that'll be a real problem for the season.
You know, David Sampson joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You know, there's a lot of articles that have been written. There's a lot of conversation. Like, why didn't Major League Baseball think of a bubble situation? And granted, yeah, pretty much impossible to have the entire league under one bubble. But maybe, you know, maybe you divide it. Maybe you do mini bubbles. You know, do you feel that it was a matter of timing, just did not have enough time to organize properly? Like, we're seeing, you know, the NBA had plenty of time to kind of, you know, get their bubble set and ready to go in Orlando, as well as NHL in Canada. Is it a matter of money? Why don't you feel that Major League Baseball pursued a bubble scenario?
It's the same reason that the NFL can't. You can't have a regular season in a bubble. What the NBA and NHL had going for them is their regular season was basically done, so they were really going into a bubble for the postseason. And I don't think it's impossible to believe that Major League Baseball will do the same thing, where they'll create a bubble for October and do everything in one location. But where, Anita? What, are you going to come to Florida and play outdoor games in the absolute searing humidity? And remember, in basketball, they're playing during the day, they're playing at night. If you're going to play a 1 o'clock game, you've got thunderstorms that happen, you've got heat, humidity. It's just not smart to do that. So I just don't think it's realistic. And baseball knew that. In the beginning, they talked about a Florida bubble, an Arizona bubble, a Florida, Arizona, Texas bubble. But you need a lot of diamonds and it possibly to have places with roofs. So could you do it in Tampa and Miami? But if you had 15 teams in Tampa, you'd be having 7 games a day, let's say, in Tampa, and 7 games a day in Miami. I just don't think there are enough hours in the day to do that properly. It's hard enough, and you've heard some basketball players saying, hey, I got to take an extra Red Bull if I'm going to play at noon or 1 o'clock. It's hard to play, and plus it's not every day, keep in mind, that basketball teams are playing. Baseball is pretty much an everyday sport, especially with this 60 games in 66 days, or what for some teams, like the Cardinals, could be 55 games in 49 days. So they're playing every day, and I think it's just unrealistic.
Before I let you go, you mentioned Stanton, and Boone came out and said that he expects to put him on the IL. How do you feel that's going to affect the Yankees? They've been, especially Judge, been ripping the cover off the ball. Gerrit Cole put out a good outing yesterday. Their pitching hasn't been stellar. Your thoughts on what you've seen from the Yankees so far, David?
You know, they're a deep team and they're a good team. And obviously with Giancarlo in that lineup, it makes it even better. And while he had been in a slump and maybe gone 2-for-21 before yesterday's game, one of the doubleheader where I think he walked, singled, and hit a home run, hamstrings are tough. And he is on the IL. They put him on a few minutes ago. And depending on how bad the strain is, you know, you measure that in weeks, not in days. So right now it starts with the 10-day DL. But you got to be so careful. And I've been talking about this as loudly as I can, Anita, because of the truncated spring training and the rush to get back to play and the lack of exhibition games. None of the offensive players could get into a rhythm. The pitchers weren't properly stretched out. And you're seeing injuries upon injuries upon injuries. And it is definitely impacting the game. That said, much like the Yankees last season when they had a B team play most of the year and they did so well, Aaron Judge said it right, and it may not make Stanton feel good. And I know as an injured player, it never feels good to hear it, but Stanton said, hey, there's a lot of people in the satellite team who want to come up and perform and do well, and we just have to have next man up, and that's the mentality in this season. And the Marlins have embraced that, right? And other teams are too, because of all the COVID and because of the other sort of muscle injuries and tendon injuries and arm and shoulder. You just got to play baseball. No matter who's in the lineup, you go and you try to win.
What does Hunter Pence tell Johnny Cueto after the game?
So he said something publicly, which was great. He said that he knows that Cueto deserved better and he feels terribly about it. And you say, you know, I lost it. I lost the ball. And I couldn't be more sorry. I'm not like that. That doesn't normally happen. The twilight in Los Angeles, I've been there for games like that. It is very hard. I've spoken to fielders who are playing left field. It's hard there in L.A. And you just say, hey, I'll get you next time. It's one of those things where as upset as Cueto looked, he'll wake up this morning, the sun will rise, and he'll go up to Pence. He'll pat him on the butt, and he'll say, we'll go get him again in 4 days.
Last but not least, one of my favorite weeks of the year. David, you know why?
Because it starts with a Sunday?
Shark Week.
It is? Does that
Shark
mean you
week,
swim every day?
Shark Week starts tonight.
So is it your favorite because you put a snorkel, some fins on, you put some chum in your bathing suit, and you just see what happens?
Oh my gosh! One of my bucket lists is you know I want to do one of those dives where you know you're in a cage and you're down there with a great white. It's one of my bucket list things.
Anita, hold on.
Fascinated with sharks. I love Shark Week, and it starts tonight at 8 o'clock.
Anita, hold on. I'm getting a call from Richard Dreyfuss on the other line. Hold on. Let me ask him if he has availability in his tank. Hold on. Richard, Anita will be right with you. She'll be right with you. All right. I'll text you his number.
You're so cute. Thanks for joining us. Always great to hear your voice. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Take care, Anita. Bye-bye.
You got it.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Is not a given, should be cherished. Anita with you on this Sunday fun day here on 98.7 ESPN, and oh, what fun is it going to be later on this afternoon and this evening. Without further ado, David Berman joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. He oversees our chalk site on ESPN as well as Daily Wager content. David, welcome in. Thank you so much for joining us. How you doing?
Good. How are you? Hopefully you can hear me well. I got about one bar.
No. We hear you just fine. I know you're on vacation with your family, so please know how much I truly appreciate your time stepping away for a minute. It is a championship going on the left coast. It's the PGA Championship taking place at TPC Harding Park. This is what I love about it. Last night, it's like 9 o'clock at night. I'm at a friend's house. We order in. We ordered dinner. Had a few bottles of wine and sat back and. You were watching some great golf at 9 o'clock at night.
Can the tour
just take place on the left, on the West Coast all the time?
I read something on Twitter the other day that said nothing's better than a West Coast major. I got a chance to work two of them myself at Torrey Pines and Pebble Beach, and just the fact that it's on in prime time, it's awesome. Like, I mean, we're on vacation, but I put the kids to bed. We're at the beach, and they go to bed, and it's 9:15. I turn on, I get to watch the back nine. It's fantastic.
It's really sensational. All right, so heading into today, Dustin Johnson at the top of the leaderboard, 9 under, somewhat of a surprise for me. But man, we're so blessed, David. Look at who's in contention, right? Like Cameron Champ, who's been playing great, one shot back, along with Scheffler. A few dudes at 7 under, Koepka, Casey, Morikawa, guys that we really liked cutting into the tournament if you watched or if you read our article on Chalk. 6 under, dude, look at this list. Berger, Fleetwood, Day, Rose, Finau, DeChambeau. I mean, it's wide open right now. Who do you like heading into today that you think at the end of the night this dude will win the PGA Championship?
It is wide open, like you said. You have, you know, upwards of 12 people within 3 strokes to the lead. But the one stat that stuck out for me the most, and this is not going to surprise anybody as to where the pick is going, I picked them in the column with you. I'm sticking with them. Brooks Koepka has more major wins than everybody else in the top 13 combined. Actually, top 19 combined. Yes, Day has a win. Rose has a win. A couple of these, Dustin Johnson has one win, but Koepka's got 4. And he's a guy who, we talked about it in the column, we talked about it on Wednesday and Friday. He just knows how to win, and he steps up in big moments. And not to take anything away from anybody else that's in the top right now, Dustin Johnson, awesome yesterday, but that was Saturday. We've seen what Dustin Johnson has done with the lead in majors. Go back to Pebble Beach in 2010, where he had a 3-shot lead and was gone by the fourth hole. His bunker issue at the PGA in Whistling Straits, where he grounded his club, and even the one that he won, he still won with a 1-shot penalty he was given at the end of the round because he screwed up and did something he shouldn't have done with the ball movement, which don't know if they would have penalized him had it been a tie, but they still penalized him afterwards. He's a guy that just, when he has the lead on Sunday in a major, other than the one time he won, again, he had a penalty that day too, does dumb things. Maybe he three putts at the British Open like he did to give Spieth the win, grounds his club, hits the ball OB. Now, he's a different Dustin Johnson than he was 10 years ago, as he does have a major win, but you know, when Brooks Koepka is sitting two shots back, it's hard to not like the guy who's won this four times.
DJ, by the way, plus 275 if you expect him to open up the tournament today at the leader, the top leaderboard, and then end it when it's all said and done. You know me. I picked Brooks Koepka. We both picked Brooks Koepka coming into this tournament. Plus 500 right now, you could get him. Now, there were in the back nine yesterday, I'm sure you were watching just as well as I was, those three consecutive holes that he bogeyed. I didn't like that at all, but he was able to. But I liked the way that he finished. He finished with a birdie on 18, and still talking smack against his very good friend DJ after the round.
He's right. That's what he does. Like, that's why nobody outside of the golf world likes him, because he's arrogant and he's good, and that's somebody that people love to hate. But he's right. Nothing that he has said over the last couple of weeks when he goes after people is wrong. Like, Dustin has won, nobody else has any, and that he's not concerned. And that's the mentality that people don't remember, because the current Tiger Woods is not the old Tiger Woods. This is what Tiger was like years ago. He may not have gone after players, but his attitude of, I am better than everybody else, and until you beat me, I am better, is the attitude that Brooks has, which is why he's won the PGA twice, and he has four majors to his credit. The guy doesn't have many PGA Tour wins, but he has four major wins because he steps up in the prime time and in the limelight, and that's what he does. And some of it is going after other players, and some of it is speaking with his game. And you talk about the three straight bogeys. That's Saturday. This is Sunday, and I think today he goes out, shoots a 66, and lets other people screw up, because it's the one thing Koepka doesn't do is he doesn't screw up. He goes out there and he plays his game and he watches others screw up.
Yeah, he's really remarkable. Ice in his veins, that's for sure. Some other plays that I like out there. Listen, I'm gonna take a shot on Cameron Champ. I liked him coming in. I put some money down that he'd finish in the top 10. And he's up there right now, one shot back. And I just like his game. You could get him to win at 11-1. Morikawa and Paul Casey to finish in the top five. You could get Morikawa at plus 138, Casey to finish at plus 225. Both of them have been playing well. The only thing about Morikawa, David, is not sure. His putter was red hot yesterday. That's the one part of his game that he struggled with, especially this season. I just don't know if that putter could show up like it did yesterday today.
Yeah, he'd have to have another exact day like he did yesterday to win this thing. He starts two shots back. His game is in good shape. His irons are as good as anybody's. But if the putter isn't hitting what it was yesterday, you're right, he'd have a hard time pulling this off. I do think Champ has a shot at this today. You're going to get good value across the board, because Johnson and Koepka are both up there with the leaders being the favorites to win. Another guy that I is this finally the year for Paul Casey? He's a guy who's been up there. He has top 10s. He has top 15s. He just hasn't won. And I like what I see out of Paul Casey. And if you take away the mess up on 18 on Friday night, where he double bogeyed the last hole because he hit the ball on the wrong side of the green and couldn't get up and down, the guy would have the lead right now if he didn't double bogey 18. He's played just as good as anybody in this tournament. I took him right after the double bogey on Friday night when I saw his odds go up because of that, and he was all of a sudden three back instead of one back or tied to the lead. I went ahead and took him at 28-1, because I don't let one hole dictate where the odds are going. Everybody else does in terms of the odds makers, but I really, really think Paul Casey has a shot to finally get that monkey off the back. And, you know, I said this before the tournament. I say this every week in the column. I'm obviously a huge Daniel Berger fan, and he's somebody that I pick every single time to finish in the top 20 and top 10. I have them both, and I also have him 35-1 to win. I don't think he pulls it off, but he's a guy who, I, at the end of the day, if you see T2 next to his name, you shouldn't be surprised.
Two other guys I just want to mention really quick before we let you go. Jason Day is tied for 7th right now. He's 6 under, and Schauffele is tied for 13th. He's 5 under. I'm going to put money on both these guys to finish in the top 5 as well. You can get Jason Day at plus 300. You could get Schauffele at plus 350. I think that's good value, and I think both of them, especially, man, what we've seen from Jason Day this week, I think that's good value for both of them, and I think they both could finish in the top 5 if they have a good round today.
If they have a good round, they should finish up there. Those are guys that, at the very worst, are going to finish, you know, one under or even par, may not win it, but they'll do good enough where the other guys will fade back. You know, you're looking at a top 10 that should finish with Day, Berger, Schauffele, DeChambeau, Koepka, Johnson. I mean, you're naming your top 10 right there. We haven't mentioned Scottie Scheffler yet. You know, he's a guy that's not used to being up there. And I mean, he had the one bad hole, or he could have the lead right now. And guys like Dahman, who also had a bad hole, but is doing well. But I don't think those guys get it done. At the end of the day, the big names is who win these events. And that's why I think Koepka, Berger, Johnson are the guys that I would play today. And I probably wouldn't put a lot on Johnson just because you're not getting good value. And he has shown the tendency to blow these leads before.
David, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really do appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your vacation with your family, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have fun. Enjoy golf.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.